Sure, thanks. First of all, just from the conversation, I'd like to send a condolence to your family. And second of all, thank you, Chair, and apologies for the committee for my back. Thank you, Chair, for the invitation, and also to just accept our condolences on behalf of Sage to your family. With me today is Mr. Onke Ngwane, who is our financial manager, and we have a short presentation where we just following up on the few questions that the committee posed to us last year on our visit that they would like to know about following the Olympics. So we're just following up on those questions that were posed to us by the committee on what our strategy was and how we prepared Team South Africa for the Rio Olympics and the Paralympic Games. I'll take you through just some statistics and the strategy, the road to Rio. Instead of the road to Rio starts about a year out of a year ahead of the game, so we're looking at about 2015. The strategy is focused on testing and anti-doping education. For a major games testing strategy like the Olympics, the Commonwealth Games, we obviously have to work closely with a body like SASCO. They have what they refer to as the long list, which eventually gets smaller and smaller as the games approach, and these are possible qualifiers. So we work with the long list in terms of which athletes will form part of the testing strategy. We look at the performance of South African athletes on both a continental level and international ranking. And the strategy includes testing and education of athletes, the coaches, and other team personnel. And one of the things that anti-doping authorities learned after Rio is that it's important that the athlete personnel also get educated on the responsibilities. As many of you may have known, there were some incidents with the Kenyan athlete personnel that fell foul of the rule that had nothing to do with the athletes. We collaborate with our international counterparts to test South African athletes when they live and train abroad, where these athletes are part of the Team South Africa long list, so that no athletes, in other words, fall through the cracks, or that athletes that just because they reside in South Africa are tested more frequently for South African athletes that are abroad. So we do have quite a few partnerships with our counterparts internationally. And to give you an example, an athlete that was on the long list, a mountain bike prospect, we tested him, we authorized our Spanish counterparts to test him in Spain, and he was a strong Rio prospect. He tested positive when he competed in Spain. He obviously didn't expect to be tested by South African authorities in Spain, and he was then disqualified from being part of Team South Africa. Just as part of the strategy, and it's not only about testing, but about international collaboration, SAIDS was invited to be part of the International Olympic Committee's pre-real task force on doping. And what that is, we were one of four countries that the IOC tasked for developing the pre-real Olympic and Paralympic testing strategy. So that was for all the sport codes, all the countries that will be going to Rio, and this was a year before the Games, and to ensure that all potential medalists in Rio were tested extensively before the Games. And then part of that is also we focused a lot on the support that we gave to both the IOC and FINA, which is the International Swimming Federation, was a test distribution plan or strategy for the African continent. All this was entirely funded by the IOC, and to give you an idea of the respect that the IOC and WADA have of the work of SAIDS, we were also invited to do testing, training, and education sessions in Kenya and Ethiopia in the lead up to the Games. And if you may recall that a few months before the Rio Olympics, WADA threatened Kenya with a non-compliance, which would have resulted in Kenya not being able to participate in the Olympics. Some statistics, just numbers on the testing for Team South Africa in the lead up to the Rio Olympics. Total number of tests that we did is up there, 650 tests. And our testing strategy includes the Olympic and Paralympic team, so we treat the two teams the same in terms of the testing strategy. Obviously, the discrepancy in tests has a lot to do with the size of the team, the ranking of the athlete, and also the what we refer to as the doping risk of the athletes and the respective sport. In the lead up to Rio, there were two athletes that tested positive as part of this testing strategy and were disqualified from competing in Rio. The one was in athletics, Victor Hogan from East Alexandria, and then cycling was Rob Crozer for EPA and Pentamine, and as I mentioned, the cyclist was tested in Spain. Anti-doping education. Again, for it to be effective, actually for any of our programs to be effective, relies on partnerships with the various sporting bodies and with the Olympics. SASCOC is the key partner in terms of a working relationship. So we get a calendar from SASCOC about the training camps, the updated Team South Africa register in terms of the long list, and qualifying events that SASCOC will use where athletes have to compete in order to reach qualifying times to make them eligible to be selected for Team South Africa. The education sessions, again, we had the advantage that in the lead up to a major game like the Olympics, the different sports federations have numerous training camps where we are able to see all the athletes together. So these athletes are tested quite regularly. They're professional, they lead, they're competing at a high level. So we're just reminding them of the responsibilities, how things have changed. we focused a lot on how to apply and the deadlines for therapeutic use exemption, because what we don't want is for a South African athlete to show up in Rio and take in a legally required medicine that happens to be banned, and then facing a disciplinary action over that. So there's a process for applying for that exemption, and we emphasize that process of the education responsibilities with the athletes. What to expect at the Rio Olympics when they are there. We work also closely with the IOC and with the local organizing committee so that our athletes are not faced with any surprises when they're at the game. The role of sports supplements are always contentious and they're ever changing, so we're always updating both the sports medical personnel, coaches, and athletes about that. And then the medicines check, for which is banned or permitted. And in this, the lead up to Rio, SATCOG developed a phone app where all of the athletes could just check on their phone when they go to the doctor or the pharmacist which substances are banned or permitted. In terms of specifically education, takeaways and information that athletes will carry with them when they're in Rio and in the pre-game holding camp, we gave them a little package that included a wallet-sized information guide, which I have in my bag. I'll leave it with Soleil to distribute to the committee. And in today's day and age, we leverage technology a lot. Again, some of our athletes are all over the world in the last 2 months before the game. So we use YouTube informational videos to train those athletes. Again, if they are not able to make any education sessions. At the games, again, I referred earlier to partnerships that we have with our international counterparts. We had a close working relationship with the local organizing committee of Rio, and they hired one of the state employees for the duration of the game to work as part of the management team, specifically dealing with the doping control management. So we sent Desmond Pater over to Rio, and the Rio LOC covered all those costs. And then they also invited two of our doping control officers to work at the Rio Paralympic Games, and those two were Nelim Kunkulu and Kasim Adams, and again the IOC covered those shots. Those are some of the what was asked from us at the last visit, just to update the committee on some of the stats and strategy in the lead up to Rio. What I also would like to use this opportunity for Anki to give a preview, a few brief words. Since the last time we visited the committee was on the reporting on our annual report and the audit outcomes, and just to assure the committee that we are working on some of the audit outcomes.
Thank you, Khalid. Morning, Chair. My condolences to you and your family in your time of grief. And I'd like to say hello and welcome to the new year to the rest of the committee, because I believe we haven't seen each other since last year. Just a brief feedback on post-audit. We drafted a formal plan that has been forwarded to sports and recreation as well as our auditors. Our biggest areas of concern always have been irregular expenditure and supply chain management. Any irregular expenditure that was identified in the prior year was presented to the board and explained and further condoned so it doesn't carry forward. And we also have processes and procedures in place to deter the recurrence of irregular expenditure, and that entailed reviewing our contracts and seeing that they are valid, and if they are not, we terminate. But luckily, all of the contracts that were found to be irregular had already gone past the due date and had expired already. The largest part of our regular expenditure in the prior year was due to overspending on the budget. And as a result, we've kept a tight leash on controlling our costs. But as this is an Olympic year, most of our costs were concentrated into the second quarter of the year, which is when the Olympics and the Paralympics took place. And as a result, we had a lot of in that period of time, we had our cash flow was under pressure, in that most expenditure occurred in that 3 month period, and our grant was given to us in three tranches. But we kept in communication with Sports and Recreation, and we managed to be able to come out of that stress in our cash flow, which showed a good relationship between us and Sports and Recreation and working together. And at the end of the day, the objective still remains the same. Our objective is to achieve a clean audit. Thank you.
I'm just interested to get feedback, and I'm surprised it wasn't mentioned in the presentation with regards to the laboratories. How many we have left that are open? How many we have facilities for, but have not been given official status as of yet? And then on an education point of view, I think a lot of the time we find the excuses for drugging is not actually purposeful, it's actually accidental. And it could be a case that someone's taken a flu medication or something and then they find out that there was just something in the tenth of the ingredients that now causes this big problem. Now I understand that SAIDS has an obligation to educate, and they've put it as one of their strong points. But at what age are they penetrating the market? Do they go to schools? Do they have a schools program? I take there's a wallet-sized list of things, but do we also engage with the drug companies, pharmaceuticals, to find out, ongoing medication that there might be a substance that was never, that the labeling or the packaging might have been a problem. So what I guess I'm trying to find out in a direct way is, of all the people tested positive, how many of those in admission were actually the people say, I took it and it was to try and make me stronger or quicker or faster, and how many actually did you find that there was actually a problem with the labeling or a medication that possibly, a troublesome medication, so to speak?
Thank you. That's another question. Thank you. Good morning, colleagues, and good morning, honorable members. Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I must just welcome this short presentation. Chaplain, I must say, I'm not going to ask these questions of the school programs because my colleagues already touched it. I want to appreciate the strategy of SAID, since if they pick up this positive on the test after they've participated, I was going to say the strategy is not working, but because their presentation is a good, they did it, I saw it, and it's a very good one. Their strategy, that means it's working. That is why they pick up these athletes and the cycling people before they participate. So I must say it's a good strategy, Chaplain. Really, I must say that, because they pick it up before they participate. Thank you.
Thank you. No, Chair, I also want to appreciate the update. The action plan, particularly around the supply chain management, It's in our radar, so we'll be looking at that quite closely, because it is something that has been happening for quite some time. So I hope careful, because you are there, it's not going to be something that is carrying. The second point, and the third, is the same point that the government has made. In particular, I'm interested in our own testing center, whether those problems are now solved. We no longer have issues around the center. The first one really is, but why we have sports supplements and certain medicines that are not allowed? How does it come about? I mean, it's the same question that the government has, but I thought I must put it in this fashion. Why do we allow sports supplements and medicine that is not allowed for sports people?
Okay, you
want to
check and to report to the members that what a vote for the research is coming on April. We just wanted to focus on post-Olympic doping results, but in your presentation you mentioned the question of education. I'm suspecting that's why other questions which were expecting to come during the budget vote are raised, but it's because of your depth of your presentation. But we were aware that you have been having a problem with jurisdiction of entering school premises. How far with that? Is education assisting you? And if not, what is your plan? Or where must we assist?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members, and thank you for the acknowledgement of our strategy leading up to Rio. And apologies for not mentioning the laboratory that the member asked the question. I realize this was actually a key aspect of the lead up to Rio in terms of we had to adjust not only our strategy but our financial planning, because all the testing samples for analysis actually sent to Doha, Qatar, and then that lab also got suspended, and we had to use two or three other labs in Europe and in the US, which had a huge financial impact, which Onke alluded to. Pertaining to the status of the implementation of the Bloemfontein lab, currently, as we speak now, WADA has been in Bloemfontein for the last week, doing the assessment, and will make a ruling on whether the suspension will be lifted by mid-March. And I would encourage the committee to invite the Bloemfontein lab to come present themselves to you on the status of the development of the improvement and how they plan on maintaining the accreditation, or if they do get the accreditation for the turnaround strategy. So I would encourage the committee to invite the lab, and rather than for me to speak on behalf of the lab, as the lab is quite independent of this. Pertaining to the other question of the capacity of other labs in the country that can fulfill that, again, it's an arduous process. There are currently 29 WADA accredited laboratories across the world, and it's a very specialized set of skills, and it's also a endeavor that doesn't really bring in huge amounts of revenue. And laboratories in countries mainly do it for the research purposes, for the intellectual capacity, and for the prestige of having such a lab
In South Africa, we've had an accredited lab since 1996, and we have consistently been the only country in Africa with an accredited lab until last year. With respect to accidental doping, how many of the athletes claim they accidentally tested positive? I would say 99% of athletes claim that it was accidental, even when the substance requires them to be injected. They will still claim it was accidental, that they were injecting themselves with some vitamin, the dose with some vitamin. So it's very difficult for me to comment on the intentionality or accidental nature of how it came about. With respect to the schools program, again, in leaps and bounds, it totally depends on the collaboration we have with the sports federations, with the respective sport codes. We have very, very extensive schools program in anti-doping education, with athletics, with swimming, with rugby, and now in the last 6 months with boxing too. With other sports, it hasn't been that widespread, but we are building on the lessons in terms of the schools program that we collaborated now with the South African Rugby Legends, where all of our education sessions have a retired, well-known rugby player that will introduce the session, and we try to have a similar format with athletics and boxing. With respect to engaging with the pharmaceutical industry, State has a database available on our website that is updated every month on any new drugs or medicines that come into the country and that are registered that athletes are allowed to take, and also those that athletes are not allowed to take. And there was a question of why we are allowing, or why athletes are allowed take some of these medicines when it's banned. The medicines that are banned in sports are not banned in broader society. So you take a substance like EPO or steroids, they have a legitimate medical role to play. EPO is traditionally prescribed for people that have leukemia, post-cancer treatment. Steroids the same, when people have muscular issues with muscle wasting or muscular strain. So there's a legitimate medical place, a therapeutic place for some of the substances that are banned in sport. Specifically banned in sport because if it's used for a non-medical reason, it will give the athlete an unfair advantage. And then obviously anything that is taken for non-medical purposes that has medical intention can be dangerous to oneself. The sports supplements. Sports supplements are always a challenge. Some of them do contain banned substances. Many of them do actually list the ingredients, and they will have a fine print that will say if you are an athlete or professional athlete that this substance may lead to a positive dose. Athletes will take it, so the fine print is there. We have two huge retailers in South Africa that have a specific little stamp that they put on some of the supplements, not all the supplements, it's called Safe Sports. When they put this stamp on, it means that these supplements have been analyzed and tested, that the ingredients listed is actually the ingredients in the product, and that it doesn't contain any banned substance in it. But unfortunately, athletes are still willing to push the envelope with some risky medicine and supplements. The issue with schools and the restriction with respect to the Schools Act in testing in schools, we have made lots of progress. We do test in schools with the collaboration of DBE, but again, the testing is not as widespread as it should be. It's probably about 150 schools across the country, and I think there's something like about 75,000 schools, high schools across the country. So So it's in its infancy. We have a very good working relationship with DBE. We're actually meeting with the new DBE schools management this week. There's been a lot of retirement in that directorate at the Department of Basic Education, so it's an issue of handover of knowledge and transition. But again, we DBE has made a lot of progress with us in the last year. We've had sessions with the curriculum advisors in life orientation. We've provided them with content that can be integrated in the life orientation curriculum. And again, at the school level, we're not so much talking about banned or permitted or testing, but we're talking about cheating, about the ethics of sport, the spirit of sport, and healthy living, and more what you can do rather than what you cannot do. And that is within the context of our schools program. And just on the last point, what has proved to be, again, very effective is harnessing what we refer to as the fast heroes of South African sport. When we send in an education officer to a school, the kids listen. But again, it's just some another adult talking to them about what they shouldn't or shouldn't be doing. But when we've used retired sports heroes, whether we've used from athletics, from boxing, from rugby, and cricket, it resonates more with the kids because these people have actually competed and played at the highest level. So what we're trying to do is also train some of our sports heroes as our education officers so that we have a wider network into our schools, and also that we can deliver some of our education sessions in more than just the four languages that we do deliver. Predominantly, we deliver education sessions in English, Afrikaans, Khoza, and Zulu. But again, we want to be able to extend it to all the languages in South Africa so that we reach all the areas.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to firstly wish the committee a successful 2017 because we've seen each other last year, the last time, and we haven't met this year. But also I think I should take this opportunity, Chair, to convey Boxing South Africa condolences to you and your family, and hoping that you will be able to pull the family and everybody together throughout this challenge. With me, I have today here the CEO, Mr. Sibili Jaka, who we have already introduced, and Mr. Thabang Moses, who is our CFO. But over and above that, I think today I would also be indicating the fact that we've been coming here every time raising the issue that we are still working on one position. which we have now filled that position. And I think the great thing also is the fact that now we have managed to also bring in a female within our top management. We've appointed an operations director, Cindy Nkomo here, she's with us. And possibly today we'll give also an opportunity to interact with you, but that the CEO would actually handle. And with your permission, Chair, if I could hand over to the CEO to take us through the presentation. Over to you, CEO.
All right, now, thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity. Greetings to the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and the members. May I also reiterate our condolences to you, chairperson. I noticed when I spoke to you yesterday that you really had a rather strenuous weekend with the bereavement. Chair, we've been invited to come and make a presentation on our engagement with the Eastern Cape Boxing Promoters Association. We have, chairperson, taken liberty, which I think you will bear with us on, to also include in the presentation the highlights and of our quarter three performance outcomes. So we were not urged to do that, but we thought that to create context, we should start by doing that. So in how we will deal with the presentation, Chair, if you allow us, we would move quickly through the third quarter and then dwell a lot more on the Eastern Cape Promoters Association engagement. Chair, I've already outlined the presentation purpose and the structure. The only thing we thought we should start with is just indicate as part of the overview that obviously the third quarter is a relatively short quarter because it includes, among others, the December vacation. So it's a graveyard term, mostly in sports sector, because around that time not many people are around. So what we've done is that during that period our focus was mostly on boxing promotion. We've done relatively little work in respect of our governance, you know, program one compared to the other terms. Another thing maybe, Chair, worthy of mentioning is that we are at a point where we are in the midstream position of our five-year strategic plan. So part of what the board has also directed us that we must do is to take stock of how far we have gone in implementing our five-year strategic plan at this point in time, so that if we need to review certain priorities or reinforce certain performance areas, we should be able to do that. Chairperson, in totality, when we accounted for the second quarter report, our performance was at 60% against predetermined objectives for the specific quarter. At this point in time, we are at 65%. We've gone up by 5%. But are we happy? No, Chair. We are not happy with that performance because there are certain things that we would have loved to conclude before December. But unfortunately, we've not been able to conclude them in December. That is why we are at 65%. What is our projection towards end of the year, which happens now, 31st of March? We think, Chair, that we will be able to achieve 90% of our APP target. At this point in time, there are two areas that we are worried about. That is in respect of training of our licensees. Our resources are not sufficient for that purpose. So there are discussions that we are having to syndicate that performance area. I think it is only through that that we might be able to achieve. The one area, Chair, that I can admit that we are going to have problems to achieve would be in respect of number of tournaments functioned. When you look at our APP, what it says is that we are supposed to have 100 tournaments functioned by end of the financial year. At this point in time, we've been performing at 21 tournaments per quarter. That means we've been lagging by about 4 tournaments each quarter. And at this point in time, we are convinced that it will be difficult to achieve that target, Chairperson. But as you would know, at this point in time, we are also reviewing our performance plan. The Auditor General has raised certain critiques about our performance plan, including the fact that some of our technical indicators are not smart principle compliant. So I think this might be one of those targets, Chair, which coming to the next year, we might not be coming back with it, because to be honest, the power and the authority for it is dependent on the promoters. From our side, we only sanction what has been brought forward by them. Chairperson, to go through the highlights, which I think will just characterize the quarter, we have at this point in time paid about 1.3 million being money paid to promoters that owed boxers. When we met the portfolio committee previously, Chairperson, we had a situation of two promoters who had been allowed to proceed with tournaments without having deposited purse money. And the third part of it is that at the receiving end of all this was a number of boxers who were without purse money after participating in tournaments. We have had Chairperson to rearrange furniture in respect of our budget during the mid-term budget review and avail this money for us to pay those boxers. So at this point in time, the boxers have been paid and the process of civil claim against the respective promoters is ongoing. We have concluded, Chairperson, a disciplinary process against one of the promoters, Sejuta Promotions, in respect of the outstanding purse money. He was found guilty of all charges by the disciplinary committee. He was given a particular deadline for him to pay the purse money, which he hasn't done. We have subsequently suspended him for the remainder of his license lifespan. And obviously, in the coming financial year, when he reapplies, the record for his delinquents will be in his file. And that is what he will need when he reapplies. So that is some of the highlights. We have had bilateral engagements with the full executive of the Eastern Cape Promoters Association. You will recall, Chairperson, in the previous sitting, we did indicate that there has been some sticky issues which from this Promoters Association point of view, we need to engage with them. We have had those two engagements. And towards the last end of the presentation, we'll go into detail in respect of that. We have had, Chairperson, the first ever seminar of BSA ring officials since 2004 that took place at Elandsfontein in Gauteng. This happened on the 11th of November 2016. We have had also, Chairperson, the successful announcement ceremony of the 2016 South African Boxers Award, Boxing Award that took place at SASCOC on the 15th of December. We have had also the awards themselves. It happened not in the third quarter, but in the fourth quarter. But at this point in time, as we appear before the portfolio committee, we can report confidently, Chair, that the awards did take place successfully on the 27th of January 2017. We have appointed four female promoters to host four tournaments. We will go into detail a little bit about this, Chair, in the later part of the presentation. And then we have appointed internal audit function. We have appointed a company called A2A. There's a typo there, Chair. It's supposed to be A2A Kopano Audit Firm, which is our internal auditor. This was one area that we are also lagging behind. In the past, our internal audit function used to be performed by the National Department of Sport and Recreation. They advised us in the current financial year that we must insource that capacity. And as a result, we have now appointed this audit firm, which is currently performing our internal audit. I've indicated, Chair, that we have commenced with civil claims against promoters who defaulted on their purse money. And we have extended this also, Chair, to cover also PBL. You'll recall that in respect of PBL, we did indicate that this was not purse money, but it was prize money, which were supposed to have been paid directly by the event manager to the boxers. That didn't happen. But what we've done as an act of courtesy is to extend assistance to those boxers to take him to task, in terms of a civil claim to recover their money. So that is an intervention that we have done because we couldn't look away and walk away from this type of situation. We have started, Chairperson, procurement exercise to secure new office premises. I think the context here, Chairperson, is that in the past financial year, our landlord was the National Department of Sport and Recreation, but we've still been advised that we must get own buildings because sport and recreation are now in a process of recruiting and filling vacancies. So in terms of their HR plan, they are strained. They don't have enough office space. Chair, we are taking a lot of time on this because, you know, the issue of office procurement is a very contentious issue. So the board said we must, before it can sign off, we must ensure that we receive an internal and an independent audit opinion on the procurement process we have followed. At this point in time, I was supposed to have reported to the board in the previous week. We can't take this matter to the board because the audit has raised a few issues which they said can give us reassurance on the following before. So I think at a time when we have fulfilled that and are confident that this might not have come back, it's only then that the board will be able to make a pronouncement on that. In terms of the act, we will then were supposed to write to the minister, who has to concur and approve the office space location that we would be taking up. Chairperson, this is just a snapshot in terms of the three program areas. I've already indicated, Chairperson, that in totality our performance is 65% of what we were supposed to achieve. Chair, to go quickly, program one, this is the one program area where we have not performed well. In the second quarter, we were at 57%. We have declined from 57% to 50%. Our internal audit has not been conducted because we appointed an internal audit capacity only in the third quarter, and this is currently ongoing. So though we would not have achieved in the third quarter, but at this point in time, it is internal audit is currently being conducted. We were supposed to have had 80% of our vacancies filled. We recruited Ms. Nkomo, but she only joined us in January. So while in the third quarter, we're not looking good at this, in January, we are now at 15% vacancy rate, which means that 85% of our funded posts are filled. We've got also to renew existing agreements. This chair, as well as the good engagement document, this we have already now worked on. And I'm confident, Chairperson, that at the end of the financial year, all our performance indicators under Program 1 would have been achieved. Program 2, Chair, this is the one area where we have done relatively well. In the second quarter, we were at 62.5% achievement. We are now sitting at 87%. All the 8 indicators in this regard have been achieved. The only one that we have not been achieved is the one of tournament sanctioned. Other than that, a lot of work has happened during the second and third quarter in respect of Program 3. In Program 3, Chair, we have achieved 2 of the 4 targets. The 2 that we have not finalized are in draft stages. That is finalization of the marketing and communication strategy, as well as finalization of the revenue generation strategy. So once we have concluded those strategy documents, we would have complied with everything that we're supposed to do in respect of quarter 3, program 3. So, Chair, I think that is our program, our quarter 3 performance at a glance. Just to go to some of the program areas, the Chairperson has spoken about the appointment of Director Operations. That last bullet, in terms of the impact, the appointment of the Director Operations brings our vacancy rate well below 15%, within our APP acceptability of 20%, and it further introduces the first female senior manager to what was previously an all-male team constituted by CEO and CFO. And then, Chairperson, there is a program called Women in Boxing, which is funded by the National Lotteries Commission. Like I indicated, we took out a bid, inviting only female promoters to bid to host this project. It's a women empowerment project. At this point in time, the first tournament is starting now on the 24th of February. It is hosted by a female promoter, Apile. The next one will be happening on the 3rd of March. It's hosted also by the female promoters, Bashi. The other 2 female promoters, Malinga and Showtime, are yet to confirm their details. The reason this is incomplete, Chair, is because there's only so much out of the pool of female boxers that you can get. So because the bid went out around the same time, some of the boxers that were flagged in the bid document were actually duplicated. When you look, for example, Rushda Malik, while she appears on the bill of Apile, she also appeared on the bill of Showtime. That meant then that after being appointed, some of the promoters would then needed to go and revise their bills. So this is our deliberate women empowerment program. The one other thing that I must also mention, Chairperson, is that this is our continuation of 16 days of activism for non-violence against women and children. Hence, the theme is Count Me In, Together Moving Women Boxing Forward. So this is our last leg of women empowerment in boxing. Chairperson, the ring official seminar, like I indicated, this took place on the 11th to the 13th. There's a set of resolutions, Chair, which I requested I should not go through at this point in time, but we will avail them to SUNE because that is an outcome of this seminar. It has done a lot of work, Chair, to raise the morale, the excitement, the dedication of our ring officials, because for a long time, this has been an area that we have not been paying attention to. So out of it as well, there are a lot of other strategic interventions that we'll need to make going forward. The South African Boxing Awards, Chair, like I indicated, this took place on the 27th of January. The detailed close-out report on this project is yet to go to the board. And once it has gone through the board, we will then include it in our next reporting cycle to the portfolio committee. Chairperson, we've got a promoters workshop that we have scheduled to take place on the 3rd and to the 4th of March 2017. This was supposed to have initially happened on the 17th to the 19th of February. We have rescheduled it because of availability of some of our critical stakeholders. The objectives thereof, amongst others, is to reflect on the status quo with regard to boxing promotion from a perspective of boxing South Africa, because there is still a lot of work that we need to do in compliance with our Boxing Act and boxing regulations that will need our boxing promoters to play ball and come on board, join hands with us to assist us to comply and to comply better. But again, Chair, when listen to the narrative of the promoters, some of the terrain where they operate, some of the pressures which force them into non-compliance are imposed by secondary stakeholders. For example, if the province and the municipalities, which are mostly the key sponsors to these promoters, don't understand the pressure that the promoters are operating in, you find that our promoters are unable to pay first money on time because he's got a sponsor from a municipality. But municipality treats the transaction more like a supply chain exercise, where they would expect that there must first be delivery before they pay. So I think somewhere out of that, there's also a need for us to understand the terrain where the promoters are operating in, so that we can reinforce them in dialogue with the secondary parties that are normally assist them. That we also need to achieve a responsive, inclusive, equitable, and commercially viable broadcast rights framework for boxing. This is part of our implementation of the Boxing in Durba resolution. We need to also reinforce awareness of the act and the regulation. It is amazing, Chair, to sometimes discover how little our promoters actually understand the regulations. So sometimes people do not comply, not because they are just delinquent, but there's a need for us to reinforce that capacity and also to share basic project management skills and to give them a toolkit for boxing promotion. And then lastly, to share best practice lessons, because while there are incidents of bad practice, but there are also incidents of best practice. So this is what we hope to achieve out of this workshop of promoters that takes place in the beginning of March. Chair, we have started now in a period where we need to renew the license. You'll recall that our license lifespan is 1 year. So we have started to encourage our promoters, our licensees across the board to renew. The current license cycle ends on the 31st of March. So this is part of what we are. Lastly is about application to host tournaments. The practice in the past has been that our licensees would apply at any point. So there's some work that we are doing to stabilize that. I'm happy that we now have the director of operations who would assist us to bring stability on that matter, to improve our system, but equally to step up communication with our licensees. Chair, I think that was just the part in respect of our quarter three performance. I will then get Chair to our engagement with the Eastern Cape Promoters Association. Chairperson, we have not recapped in detail our last update to the portfolio committee. But just to recap that before I get into the presentation, I think members will recall that we reported previously that we assisted the Eastern Cape Promoters Association to go to their AGM, which happened in June. And I think we shared with the committee some of the resolutions that came out of the AGM of the Eastern Cape Promoters Association, and the fact that the AGM had assisted to bring together the warring parties which were previously at the Eastern Cape. At this point in time, Chairperson, in our last engagement on the 11th of October, we then also received a communique from the Portfolio Committee in respect of areas of discomfort from the Promoters Association. We initiated a meeting with the Eastern Cape Promoters Association on the 5th of November. And to that extent, Chairperson, we assisted the entire executive to travel to Gauteng to meet with the board so that we can have an eyeball-to-eyeball conversation and get to understand what are the areas of difficulty and what are the areas of commonality where we can work together to take the sport of boxing forward. Chair, the first meeting happened on the 5th of November, and the second one happened on the 20th of January at Eastern Cape Department of Sports, Arts and Culture Regional Offices. At this point, at this moment, a lot of headway has been made to clarify the rules of engagement between the board and this provincial structure, and to further locate issues in proper perspective. I will give examples, Chair, later on when we get to the detail of the presentation. There were a number of items proposed by the Eastern Cape Promoters Association for discussion with the board, and all these have now been discussed. Some matters were clarified on the spot, while others were properly located to be rather matters of national competence and not that of a provincial association. Some of the issues that were raised, the issue of licensing of boxers and promoters. As part of other issues raised and discussed, the Eastern Cape Promoters Association proposed that licensing of boxers must not be deadline driven, like they needed that any time during the financial year, anybody can apply for a license. Something that we clarified on the spot, that listen, when you are responsible for an organization which is also a public entity, we've got reporting timelines, so we need certainty to know that we've got so many boxers, because these boxers, we also need to take up insurance for them, for example. So we can't just have an endless process, because at this point in time, the practice seems to be that most of our licensees opt to license for activity. And as much as they opt to license for activity, the same mindset is the same mindset that makes other boxers to train only for competition. And in between competition, our boxers are not optimally fit. So we discussed that, and I think the association understood our point of view. And then the association also submitted an array of challenges which face promoters upon renewal of their licenses. But however, we clarified that such challenges should be escalated on time, so that we are able to be aware and you know, of these challenges, and also to find a way to assist our promoters. The practice too often is that our licensees would wait until the license has expired and he is informed that you cannot practice anymore. And only then they run around, for example, if it is boxers, to try and get the blood test, to try and get the doctor to create the scan for the results that we require for them to license. And they sit with this issue. So we encourage that taking a leap from our engagement, specifically with the promoters, we would then make a communique to all licensees that if there are challenges, it is as much in your interest as it ours that we get to know about that on time. And as the regulator, we step in to assist. And then we further clarify that there is provision for special consideration of any licensee, license application by the board, provided that reasons are compelling and unavoidable. So essentially what this means, Chair, is that while you've got other licensees who would keep away deliberately and not renew their licenses, but there are instances of other licensees that will have compelling reasons, and the competency to renew licenses of boxers is not with the CEO but the board. So as long as our licensees understand that whenever they apply in between board meetings, they will unfortunately have to wait for the board. And I think this was one of those areas which, coming from the AGM of the Eastern Cape Promoters Association, was a sticky matter. And we exchanged it, and I think at the end, Eastern Cape Promoters Association agreed, submitted that they would like to see recruitment process of new promoters stratified and transparent. And to this effect, they will submit a proposal for consideration by PSA. I think this has to do with strengthening the criteria for us to issue licenses to promoters. I don't think it's a reactionary view. It's something that we welcome. Instead, we'll work together to do that, because I mentioned earlier on that some of our promoters don't even understand the regulation properly because our criteria is not stringent. So when an association raises such, I think it was only something that we can welcome and said, yes, we will work together with it. And then the association indicated that they don't have anything to submit regarding the item of boxing is back. But what we have noticed, Chair, which I think we can share with the portfolio committee, is that in the Eastern Cape, because of regional dynamics, at this point in time, Nelson Mandela also feels excluded, because outside the association, the PE Promoters Association from Nelson Mandela specifically, they wrote to us and said that we've noticed a pattern that while Boxing is Back has been hosted in Eastern Cape a number of times, it seems to be hosted mostly on the Buffalo City side. So we would want, as a region, to engage with you directly and make provision for us. So we raised that with the association, because it is not a matter of a region opting not to recognize the problem, but it is a matter of a region saying that within the dynamics of the province, we are unique and we request that you must have a special dispensation for us in that. So we took it back to the leadership of the Eastern Cape Promoters Association and said, this is a matter that has come to our attention and we need you to pay attention to it. And I think it is a fair point because regions are a reality and they exist. And if we seem to address a province but to omit providing for the regional dynamics within the province, it is only something that will later on come and create backfire. But we also mentioned that we've got an oncoming Promoters Association meeting where issues of national competence will be discussed there. The one issue which the province also raised was the issue of provincial commissions, that the region submitted that the Boxing Indaba resolution have not been implemented in respect of the establishment of provincial commissions and the reviewing of the boxing regulations. And BSA indicated that while the need and rationale for expansion of BSA establishment cannot be overemphasized, but it should however be noted that this matter has financial implications which BSA is currently not in the position to afford. It was mutually agreed that the exercise of preparing a motivation to the minister for the review of the regulations, flagging out specific areas where clearly a review or modernization is required, should be undertaken. So even the Boxing Indaba resolutions were explicit that there are challenges in the regulations and we need a process to address those challenges. So we have agreed on a process that, led by PSA, we should flag out the challenges that, the regulations still impose on us. I think there's also an area in the regulation chain which the board discussed. For example, when you look at the licensing cycle, in terms of the regulations, it still puts it on the calendar year and not on the financial year. So I think those challenges are challenges that we have admitted that, yes, there are those, and then it's a process that will be taken up with the minister. The critical issue, Chair, is this issue of function levies. We explained this in depth previously when we appeared before the Portfolio Committee. Chair, I must submit that as Boxing South Africa, we are pretty much worried about this issue of a purported difference in interpretation with regards to what the regulations say in respect of the sanction levies. Mm-hmm. The Promoters Association of Eastern Cape mentioned that they maintain that their interpretation of the Act and the regulations stand. They admitted that in the meeting of the 5th of November, they were supposed to have given us what their legal opinion is, because in that discussion, Chair, the association indicated that this is our political view, but at the same time, it is also a view which we have a legal opinion on, that the 5% and 10% function levy is not supposed to be aggregated on net, but on gross. The example is that, Chair, if broadcast rights are worth 1 million and a promoter receives 1 million from a broadcaster, according to their interpretation, they are supposed to first spend, and then after they have spent, if there's anything that remains in the kitty, they only pay 10% thereof to Boxing SA. Now, the practice over the years and what the regulations say is that if you've got 1 million of broadcast right, 10% thereof is what you pay to Boxing SA. That is our definition of the what sanction levy means. If you've got any sponsorship or any revenue, including gate takings, 5% is what you pay to Boxing. And in practice, when a promoter applies to host a tournament, they would submit an application which would take for sanction, and in there they would only declare the purse money, including money for the payment of ring officials. And then after a promoter has hosted the tournament, 7 days after that tournament, the promoter will then dispose an affidavit. And in that affidavit, the promoter will indicate that my revenue streams were as follows. From broadcast, I got this much, and therefore this is your 10%. From my gate takings and other sponsors, I got this much, and this is your 5%. Conceptually, contextually, that is what the regulations say. By practice, since the regulations were passed in 2004, that has been the practice. There has just been this Damascus moment in the past 3-4 years, which, for whatever reason, promoters now started noticing that, no, actually, we're not supposed to be doing things this way, we are doing things the other way. Like I indicated previously, Chair, the danger about this is that as a result of this, and I will call it a political position because maybe it's a position of an association, but as a result of that, you've got promoters that have locked themselves in a situation where if the one interpretation falls and the other one stands, those promoters, Chair, I doubt if they will be able to get out of the quagmire. You've got a promoter that owes more than 1.8 million because there's just been this issue of playing around the interpretation and not paying the sanction levy. So when that interpretation falls, and the correct interpretation, which is what DSA maintains is correct, getting out of that situation is going to be problematic. And I think this is now what characterizes why, for some promoters, this is going to be a life or death battle, because an alternative to the view they hold is end of business. Unless if maybe they've not been paying, but they've been holding that money somewhere. So I thought I must give that as the context, Chair, because this is a very thorny issue. Now, Chair, we have put here an extract of what the regulations say, Section 11 of the regulations. When you look at Section 11, subsection 5B, it is explicit on what within 30 days after the staging of a tournament to Boxing SA, a promoter must do. Whereas the total of the broadcast income and other income does not exceed 2 million, an amount equal to the total of 10% of the broadcast income and 5% of the other income plus value added tax. Now, this is what the promoter must declare to us. Where the total of the broadcast income and other income exceeds 2 million, the sanction fee plus value added tax, which was agreed in writing by Boxing SA and the promoter prior to the sanction of the tournament by Boxing SA. So this is a literal interpretation of what the regulations say. So, Chair, I can indicate to the committee that we have since sought a legal opinion on the matter. And in terms of that legal opinion, the letter of the law reinforces what we believe. But the practice as well from 2004, including some of these promoters that are now not complying, there was a point when they were complying and they had no problems. And then just somewhere after the Boxing Indaba, thereabout, and I'm not necessarily saying as a statement of fact that it could have been after, maybe could have been before, but around that period of 2012-2013, this culture of people not paying started happening. And then when debt collection was reinforced, this interpretation issue started coming up that, no, by the way, the reason we are not paying is not because we are bad debtors, but it's because we got a view that you as Boxing SA, you are implementing the regulations improperly. So, Chair, this is the major bone of contention. But out of the meeting that we had, that meeting emphasized that this issue of different interpretation of the boxing regulation in respect of sanction levies still remain a major thorny issue and need to be fast-tracked and finalized. The agreement was that both parties should source legal opinion on this matter and then find some amicable solution to their divergent views on the matter. DSA has already sourced the legal opinion on this matter, and it reinforces the long-held view that the current interpretation is correct. We, on the 10th of February 2017, we received a correspondence from the legal practitioner appointed by the Eastern Cape Promoters Association requesting an extension. Chairperson, my apology that we put it as the 20th of February. It is actually the 24th of February, which is this Friday, because they requested 10 working days for them to put together their legal opinion, and we'll then go back to the boardroom again to resolve this issue. Like I've indicated, Chair, the most that we will lose out of this matter is time, but it's a matter that we don't want to drag beyond the current financial year. And I think this is an issue, Chair, which when we characterize the correspondence that was presented to the portfolio committee previously, we indicated that this is the debt collection matter. You've got promoters who, in terms of the law, were supposed 7 days after their tournament to dispose affidavits of their income, and then within 30 days after the tournament to pay their dues. They've not been doing that. Auditor General is cracking a whip on us as Boxing SA that we are incapable of collecting revenue, and that is part of the key performance areas of any accounting officer, to collect that revenue. That chair, while it has gone down, it has gone down in respect of the number of promoters that were in the initial list by October. Most of the promoters have now started coming forth to pay, but you still have some of these promoters that are in transition on the matter. They are not willing to pay, they are holding on to the view. And when you look at the pattern, those promoters happen to be the ones that owe the most money. And just to not, I know Chair is not part of the record, but that money, you've got one promoter sitting at 1.8 million, you've got two promoters sitting at 800,000, and then the rest of the promoters is 100,000 and below. So the majority of the promoters, I think, Chair, they are going to see the light of day and they will comply. But you've got these other promoters whose debt value is such that they are likely to hold on to this debate for the longest of time. So we are in the boardroom about it, Chair. The board has implored that we shouldn't rush to the court, because to be honest, the temptation from administration at some point was that we must go to the court. But this put the sport into disrepute, and at the same time, it also undermines the internal dispute resolution process which we have put in place. So we will try the legal opinion reconciliation. If through guidance of our legal teams we can't find each other, we will then need to go through our dispute resolution committee to find a resolution. And if, Chair, the dispute resolution process confirms that the one view is correct, yet you still have promoters that don't want to comply, we would then be left with no option, Chair, but to find recourse from the court in respect of this matter, because we cannot leave it unattended. It is the one matter that stands between us and the clean audit that we seek to achieve. So I think, Chair, in a nutshell, this is how we understood the brief that we were invited for in respect of giving an update to the portfolio committee about our interaction with the Eastern Cape Promoters Association. I thank you, Chair.
No, fine. Thanks, Chair. I will respond on some of the questions. Thank you.
Honourable members, let me first thank that we come to court with the auditory performance report. We appreciate that they've done that, giving us a clear light whilst we hear that the other stakeholders are not yet having this cost-country performance report, because they were awarded come April, but with you assisted us to start with it. And I'm suspecting that the members were engaging in both presentations. They are so interesting, both of them, on the last two comments. Members, this is the report. Morning, and you are the first one to talk. Morning, Honorable Muteka, second, Honorable Beth, Honorable Nan, in that part of Honorable the Week. Thank you. Good morning, Honorable Member. Going to the last one.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, colleagues. Yeah, the presentation is very clear. I suspect your father was a teacher, the way he explained things. Chairperson, we appreciate the fact now that we are beginning to recognize women in boxing. So this women empowerment is very important. I think it took you too long now to check on these promoters now that they've not been paying. But that's not really been a problem now to pay. I don't know whether we've been a portion now, perhaps you come together and perhaps you write off these debts. Rwanda, because money is a problem. Perhaps these people may just run away and no longer be interested in boxing. But one Bishop person, I don't have a lot of questions. I said the presentation is good. So we usually said nowadays, now when a teacher is teaching very well, then you get it clear, then you say, yeah, come on. Then I would say, good one needs no push. So since I don't have questions, Chairperson, can you allow me to go to another comment?
A teacher is always a teacher. Go and conquer it with pleasure. The next and honorable man. Okay.
Let me first appreciate your presentation. My first question will be about the new offices that they have to procure. He raised that there are some issues from the auditor that they have to deal with before they can finalize the deal. So I would like to know which what are they? And then this promoters company called Seduta Promotion, did they accept the sanction or did they take you to court, something like that? I just want to know after you banned their license. And then your bilateral engagement with the Eastern Cape Promoters Association. I want to know what happened to that I can say illegally emerged association due to the crisis that were happening. Did they accept the AGM result? Now we have one united association there, because we don't want the situation whereby we are told everything is okay, then when you get there, we find other people calling themselves association, and that will be a problem. I think the issue of PE and Buffalo City might not be only PE concern, because we have big cities like Mutata there and others. We must also check if this boxing is covering all other cities. We don't have to wait for someone to cry, then we follow up on them. So what my point is, don't only look at PE, also look at other areas, and that must apply to other provinces as well, so that you don't have to be reactionary. Okay, on the 25th of February, what will happen if these people didn't submit their legal opinion? What are you going to do after the 24th? And again, maybe CEO will clarify or the chairperson. When the promoters are saying their only intention is to pay against the net, not the gross, how are you going to get exact monies that they left with? Because the gross is what they were allocated with, then you know that they got so much from there. So what is due to you is so much. But now, if it's after they paid all the other things and all this, and then how are you going to be exactly in terms of how much is due to you and how much is left with them? I think it's a bit complicated there. Maybe if you can get clarity on that. I'm not saying they are right. I'm not saying you are right. The legal opinions will say that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Let me also appreciate the presentation. It was very informative. I've also had a few questions around the office space and the legal opinion, which is inevitable lead to court. How do you avoid that? What mechanism do you have in place regarding the monitoring of promoters if being suspended not to participate in boxing in any way? And then I also want to add in terms of the women's boxing that I'm very proud that Melissa Miller comes from El Dorado Park and she's doing well, and I just want to say we're very proud that she also participates in women, 16 days of women in activism, and keep up there. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable.
Thank you. Thank you, Chef. I think I must join my colleagues on welcoming the presentation. Three things, Chairperson, that I want to start with. To thank the Boxing SA. One, I must thank them for inviting us on their sports awards, although. And secondly, I must also thank them for intervening on the issue of Eastern Cape, because really that was a serious one. Because if those people had guns, they should have shot each other there. The last one, the update on the quarter three performance, you have really achieved as per ATP targets when I look at your report here. So I'm looking, I was checking on your, because your resolutions, you had these resolutions on the 13th of September 2013, if I'm not mistaken. There is where you have said you're not implemented. You are just reminding me of one of the leaders who always say, I'm not dealing with researchers, because why I'm not dealing with researchers? They give you 5 years term of office. You take 3 years or 4 years busy with the research. Then the other years you start implementing. You're not even finished with the implementing on what you're supposed to do. When you go out, you'll go without having implemented anything. I don't know if maybe what is holding you not to implement, you are still busy with some researchers on that. I don't know. And on that resolution, you took the your resolution on the boxing endeavor that you'll convene provincial meeting with the provincial MECs jointly with the basic education to devise strategies for the rollout of boxing in schools as part of the school's program. I just want to find out how far, if we have started with your meetings to those with those MECs on those provinces. Why I'm asking this question is that if there are promoters, I'm from rural areas, there are boxing promoters who have started engaging schools, and I'm telling you those schools, they are just welcoming them with wide hands to start these programs of developing the boxers in those schools. But believe me, they don't have any equipment. They are just, I remember one day I've raised this, that they always stage these tournaments, but they've got nothing. Now they've started this, there is a tournament in where I'm staying under the Nkomazi municipality, it's a Lati Cup. They are just assisting them. Before they start this soccer, they call the boxers to come and do their tournament there. It's only the municipality who is assisting them. But their problem is the equipment. And those schools, I'll only mention four schools which I know that they've already started with the program. Thank you.
No, okay, I also appreciate their presentation. My comment is on three areas. The first is the one that we want to make it to clean, because boxing is one entity that has been bringing us down for quite some time. So I hope the CFO is to assist us with those controls. Otherwise, it's in our hand in terms of the action plan. The second area, and I've made my point across, but my view really is that the system of provincial commissions, we must deal with them. Because already we have gone to Eastern Cape, we have gone to Free State. It's a matter that when we look at it, there might be a gap. But maybe the director operation will be in a position to come with a solution. But I think somehow there is a need to ensure that we close that gap. That provinces must not feel that the boxing is so far away from them. I understand that you are saying it might be expensive for now, but it is something that, as the portfolio committee, it has been brought to our attention. And sometimes we might not understand it as you do, as the actual practice. The last one, I think we appreciate your engagement with the Eastern Cape boxing. You know that is the home of boxing, Eastern Cape. So and it assists us because sometimes the line is very thin between you administrators and ourselves. But what is good is that because we shared with you, we all made duplication. Although your engagement with them will assist us to do a correction. So engage, exhaust that, and keep on informing us, because like I indicated, it's a thin line between yourself and ourselves. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. I think it is proper to begin, like all other honorable members, to appreciate the presentation, also, and also to appreciate that as we've been at this portfolio committee, we've been complaining that there is, if any, very little that is happening in boxing. But as we are here today, we can see that there is progress that is being made. So I think it is very important to appreciate that, though it is not enough, it's not where we would want it to be. Especially because if you look at boxing right now, you can see that it is still based in certain provinces, like your Eastern Cape is leading. Other provinces are not into it that much. So until such time that we ensure that when you're talking boxing South Africa, you're talking all the provinces, it means that we still have a challenge there, Chairperson. The last one, Chair, on the 27th of January, I attended the awards in Durban. The function was well organized, and I was very much impressed. And it is also where I noticed that this boxing is still lacking in most of the provinces in South Africa. Chairperson, I was touched by one boy, I think he is from Eastern Cape. He received an award. I don't know whether it's a prospect box of the year. And that guy said, though they are trying very much, but he is having a problem that they do not have a place to gym.
Sorry, Honorable Mabiga. Welcome this veteran who has been hospitalized. I've forgotten to tell you that he apologized that he's going to start from the doctor. You see now he's walking straight upward. He had a good operation, a major one. He's walking again. Keep it up. Don't take it more than that you can chew. Today, we're seeing somebody used to be a cripple, not by bed, by nature. Welcome, Honorable Musi. I'm very sorry, Honorable Mabiga. I thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair. I was saying this boy receives an award and says, though he has received an award, but the conditions where he is training is very bad. They are using a class with broken windows, a class with no lights. So when they have to train, they need to ensure that they only do their training during the day. I was so touched, Chairperson, and I wonder if boxing is something to, because I know as they were there, they know who I'm talking about. If there is something that they can do, because you cannot have a potential champion who is struggling to get the facilities to train, because I think that is what we want to achieve, to ensure that we produce a champion. So if they will be as good as being able to get awards, but only to find that they are having it very difficult to train, I think Boxing South Africa and maybe ourselves need to do something about such kind of a situation. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable
Mabiga.
Thank you, so much, Honorable Member. Let me also join you appreciating what you once told us when we are in a new office, that can you please give you a chance. We're so harsh because the boxing South Africa was collapsing. Every now and then, every board just disappeared. And when we even talked to you, we didn't treat you with soft gloves as boxers also, because we wanted that you must do what we are trying to do now. The only thing that I want to ask, I'm sure it's related to somebody who started to ask about these two associations. We decided to call them A and B. Are they part of whatever you are resolving? Are you giving us an surety that those two associations which were fighting among themselves, forgetting about the boxers, that when you're giving us this report, you are talking of them also? Because when we were from there, we're thinking that all is not well. It can be Eastern Cape where most of boxers are coming from, but we're seeing that if they are fighting like this, nothing. And we're thinking, you God, who have said we'll be going back to themselves, but this committee took a decision saying that no, this brought this thing to the minister and to the your good friend tell you to act immediately, but want to get clear what you have resolved. Did you resolve this A and B and by this statement that you have given us? Also, in some of your highlights, I wanted to check that Mama Alice AC could be Jutta. You decided to take civil claim. When I'm looking and listening to you, I'm seeing as a criminal or fraud. Because is it not a theft? You decided to treat it like a civil claim. I'm not saying we are wrong, but if somebody has done this crime, and you decided to suspend, maybe it's your advice of your lawyer. Is there any budget for you to assist in these boxers where there is no equipment, where there is no protective headgear, research or under age learners, and on what I've just read about the what you call about this theft or about this suspended somebody. I wanted just to ask those questions, but also keep it up your good work. Try to gallop to meet your targets. You said you are about 65 or 55, but you are keeping us a hope that come financial year, you will be there. We are hoping that we are trusting you, but when you are not there, we cannot say thank you. But we are doing steady work, and also we are helping most, some of members. They were not seeing when the department is taking you to their offices. It's because you wanted to do what she has done, the good work. But now, pull up your sources. We are in a good track record, I think. Any responses? I'm sorry about my voice.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and possibly in thanking also members. We need also to take that opportunity to also thank the department. You're quite right to say by us moving to the department, it helps us to be able to achieve most of our objectives, and the fact that financially we managed to save some money to be able to cover certain areas. I'm going to respond to some of the questions and hand over to firstly possibly to the CFO, just to assure the honourable member on the issue of controls, and then from that I think the CEO will take all other points. The first issue that possibly in general that I would request possibly all of us to jointly assist each other is the issue around facilities and especially facilities, because that issue is a challenge to all of us, and it's not only about boxing, it is actually about sports in general, but it comes back to boxing, especially with the fact that and you won't believe that most of our champions, they come out of very bad training facilities. And it's not a good thing to celebrate. It's something that we feel bad about. But unfortunately, as a regulator, we can't provide facilities. And it's one of those things that between the Department of Sports and Recreation and also municipalities, they are trying to work around the issue on facilities. And why I'm saying possibly we should jointly assist each other is to make sure that the money for facilities is actually transferred to the right place and actually utilized for what it's supposed to. Our facilities, especially in disadvantaged communities, are just not the correct facilities at all. And unfortunately, I think from our side as a regulator, there's very little that we can do, but I think we can join any other forum where we can actually canvass for that. The second issue that I just want to touch on is the issue around the resolutions of 2013. The list of resolutions for 2013 Boxing Indaba were quite long, and over and above that, there were areas where some of the resolutions were supposed to be implemented by SANABO and those others implemented by Boxing South Africa. And I think the issues that Honorable Manana raised about schools, sport, and the resolutions taken around that particular area, it's some of those activities. And I know every time I keep on saying, possibly every time when we come here, we should bring in SANABO. And I think we are actually not applying that. I think we need to insist that they also come in. The nice thing with that with SANABO is the fact that they've just launched a project now where they are starting a league within most of the communities. And part of that, I think it also includes equipment. But I think they will be the right people to report on that. But all in all, I think on our side, I must agree that possibly we are being hard on ourselves on those resolutions. We have implemented most of those resolutions. Where we couldn't implement some of the resolutions is because of the fact that some of them might need some finances, and we didn't actually allocate. And unfortunately, it's because of we don't have money on our side. There was no allocation of funds in line with some of the resolutions. But all in all, I think in general, most of the resolution, the awards is part of the resolution. The issue of boxing is back. The issue of women is part of the resolution. So we have actually implemented most of those resolutions. And I think, again, we would need to actually keep on ticking some of the areas where we have achieved and where we didn't achieve, and possibly give reasons why we couldn't achieve those objectives. The issue around provincial commissions is part of the resolution, and it's one of the areas that we discussed with the Eastern Cape promoters. And it's one of the issues that we said we need to speed up our discussion with the Department of Sports and Recreation, because of for us to set up those provincial commissions, we need to actually also look at the regulations. And unfortunately, for us to change the regulations, we need also the approval from the Department of Sports. So it's one of the issues that we have identified. So it is one of the issues that possibly it would assist us in making sure that we run in all provinces, but also much more smoother, and make sure that provinces feel closer to us. So that issue is one of our priorities. And I think our next meeting, we have requested the CEO to write to the minister's office to request for a meeting. And part of the issues that we'll be discussing with the minister is that particular issue. CFO, can you address the issue of controls to the dashboard if ever you are keeping your eyes on that one? Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Chair. We have not specifically prepared presentation on them. However, we are following up with our action plan to make sure that all the issues which have been raised by the Office of the Auditor General are being dealt with and are reported to every month.
The other issue which have been mentioned is the part of the things that have been done is even on procurement of things like accommodation, as in like getting a new building. You find that there's a lot of rules that needed to be checked, and making sure that we do a checklist of all the things, whether procurement of such, whether the committees have been set, whether the adverts were done, were advertised correctly, and these are some of the issues that will then create a delay in maybe, for instance, just procuring office space to be done. And that's the reason why you find that this matter of office relocation, we have already advertised last year, sometimes in October. It took us 21 days, and within the 21 days, there was another issue which were raised by people who have tendered for that. We took another 21 days, which made the tender to only close on the 5th of January. All the procurement processes have been followed and that the committees had to sit. So at the present moment, the internal auditor is just making sure that in all areas, are there gaps that they have maybe identified and said in this particular, do you have a charter? If you don't have a charter, do you have a regulation that governs the process? So basically at the present moment, we are ensuring that all the checks and balances are made. And that's the reason why we are at the point where we have to make sure that we don't skip any other matter that may be important for us to make sure that we don't create, or we try to avoid the emergence of this irregular expenditure, as you know that is one of the critical points that have been identified. Thank you very much, Chair.
Before I hand over to the CEO, there was an issue raised about why are promoters no longer paying whilst they were paying before. I think I must accept the fact that there was a certain time in our office where our administration was not that good. And I think most of the promoters took advantage of that period. And once they were not paying, no one was making any follow-up with them on their payments. And that's the reason why when we have the machinery in the office and no following up on other issues now, they are starting to create a problem because they then realize how much some of them didn't pay. But others were actually paying throughout. I mean, we do have promoters who are paying throughout their 5% and 10% as per the regulations. So that's what I'm saying. I think some of them just took advantage at a certain stage when our office was not well functional and no one was making a follow-up with them. CEO, if you could answer all other questions. Thanks.
No, thanks, Chairperson, and thanks to members. The issue of office space, I think the CFO has dealt with that. The issue of CJUTA promotions and whether they have accepted the disciplinary committee sanction or not. Chairperson, at the end, the promoter accepted the sanction. But I'll need to give a bit of context to it. The promoter was charged in October. The disciplinary process started and the promoter had issues about logistics of arriving at Gauteng. And we thought, okay, we will then extend assistance to you. We took it upon ourselves to fly him in for the disciplinary hearing. Availability issues, I want to bring in my lawyer. And then at the end, the hearing set on the 15th of December. And that's when the sanction was given. The view of Boxing SA has been that this is not the sanction is not befitting of the offense. I think the board has been forthright that we think you should have been a bit more harsher. Because what the sanction said was that after a long time of debate and where the promoter believed that the disciplinary committee needed to be educated on boxing regulations and all that. At the end of that, he then admitted and pleaded guilty to the charges, but after a long marathon process of the whole day. But because in any case, the prosecution had put together a case so befitting, the prosecution implored the presiding officers to make a finding, and that is why he was found guilty on, the, on all charges. And then the disciplinary committee said, we will give you 30 days to pay the test money that you say you had no intention not to pay. Then he said, I needed 60 days, so can you please be lenient? And then he was given until the 15th of February to pay that money off a suspension. The promoter literally waited until the 2 days before the 15th of February, then approached Boxing SA and said, I want lenience. I'm willing to pay, but I don't have money. So can you please just extend so that I pay later? But by that time, it was literally a Tuesday when the 15th was on a Wednesday. And I think he wrote to the board, and the board expressed the view that, listen, you were found guilty by the disciplinary committee, and you were given 60 days. You can't wait until day 59. But the good thing is that he had now written to say, I accept the verdict, but I need a bit more time to comply. So I think that is just the context that is worthy of putting up that. And he had also 10 days to appeal, which he didn't appeal between the 15th and the 10th day thereafter. The issue of the associations, whether there is another association chair. Let me paint the scenario of what is happening. In the Eastern Cape, you have anything between 24 and 26 promoters. My apology, Chair, I don't have the exact number in this presentation of how many promoters were in the meeting of the AGM, but I will bring that. We confirmed that it was the majority. We can confirm also that because there were two executives, some of the members from the one executive were ultimately elected to serve in this all-encompassing executive. Interestingly though, I then met up with one promoter who had problems about the provision manager, Mr. Sinyali. And then when I met with him, he sat me down and said to me, CEO, I'm aware that you believe that there is peace in the Eastern Cape, but I want to indicate to you that I'm still chairperson of the other group. There are a few members of mine who went there, but they went there without my mandate. Now, out of a democratic process, when the majority of the promoters have found each other, and you've got one person that is still outside, should we look away? No, maybe not. But it is important, Chair, that we paint a picture of what the problem is. The problem with the AGM of the Eastern Cape Promoters Association is because the Eastern Cape Promoters Association ran ahead of the process dictated by Boxing SA. Now, we do not have, in terms of the Act, what the Act says is that there must be a constitution that is signed off by BSA. And that, on the basis of that constitution, an AGM must be held. And out of that AGM, when a leadership is elected, they also have obligations to report in terms of the set of annual activities. Now, annual activities means an annual report. That is your non-financial performance and your financial performance. Not all those boxes have been ticked. But the good thing about this AGM is that it at least put us on a trajectory where we've got one umbrella body representative of the majority of the Eastern of promoters in the Eastern Cape to start engaging with. And what we need to do, not only for the Eastern Cape Promoters Association, for all these associations, we need now to sign off a constitution and to take charge of the process of the AGM, including the elections, because those are some of the elements where, while there has been compliance, it is what loosely one can say, it is not the kind of compliance that we are happy with, because the BSA is not firmly in there, was not firmly in the driving seat of that process. But at least it is a process that has brought in the majority. Is that process solid? Chair, I can tell you, unfortunately, one is starting to see the cracks again. Not the cracks between the one association and the other, but former friends. It appears now that there's again starting to be cracks. So it is unfortunately that promoters are business people. They find each other, they lose each other along the way. As we were in the Eastern Cape, we sat in a meeting where apologies were presented. As I was in the road driving out of Eastern Cape, just to give an example, I get an SMS from Mentambi that, are you aware I was not in that meeting? I need to meet with you, I've got issues. So some of these issues, Chair, I think it is going to take a little bit of time to resolve them completely. But our preoccupation as the regulator is to be processed and to ensure that there is a constitution and we try things by the constitution. So we are noticing some of these things, but our preoccupation is that we must get the constitution and channel them on. And that is why we have opted to remain in dialogue with each other so that we can drive all of them to an AGM. Chair, the issue of Buffalo City, I think it's counsel from the portfolio committee that we need to just be alive to that, and definitely we will do that, because I can tell you for a fact, if the next boxing tournament goes again to Buffalo City, you will have that pushback from the other regions that feel that they are excluded. So I think I agree, Chair, with the committee that it's something that we need to keep an eye on. Chair, I've already indicated that what happens if the legal opinion from the promoters does not come, then we will unfortunately need to go through a dispute resolution process. Because I think our attitude is that while we expect our licensees to comply with this dispute resolution process, which is an internal process, we ourselves as well will need to comply with that. So I think if there is no legal opinion and no legal team to get into the boardroom with us, we will just jump that stage and then request the dispute, our dispute resolution panel to assist us find each other. Chair, Honorable Muteka asked about the practicality of determining gross. I can admit now that we do not have that capacity. Because you can imagine if a promoter receives a sponsor or broadcast rights money and goes and spends it and then he comes out in the negative, then does it mean we're supposed to take 10% of those liabilities? So practically, Chair, it is not possible. The reason it was determined on net is because it's clean, it's upfront, and it's unmanipulatable. But once you start allowing a promoter to raise sponsorship, to spend money, and then come and say, this is where the list of my cost drivers, this is what is remaining, and then this is what you must levy me against, we do not have that administrative capacity to even start auditing that. So practically, Honorable, we do not have that capacity, and I don't think we will be able to even do that. The M&E of suspended promoters, Honorable Bev, I think this is a challenge that we will need to tighten up. The reason I think it is a challenge that we will need to tighten up is because promoters particularly have very creative ways of reincarnating themselves. We still, in the previous financial year, have instances of promoters where on paper the promotion company is held against the female name. But in business practice, there's the husband. You know, like in boxing, the husband is a trainer, the wife is a promoter. But pretty much the lines are blurred because the promoter zigzags between the two. So we have those type of challenges. Now, that type of a challenge, it then allows promoters to creatively, once you have suspended him, there could be a way of syndicating that. So I think I wouldn't want to say at this point in time we've got M&E processes that we trust and are confident about, but it's a challenge that we take, and I think when we report in the next cycle, we will talk about how we are strengthening our systems to ensure that we close down that gaps. Even the promoters that have been suspended now, I mean, because of our relationship with international bodies, it is possible that you, when a promoter is suspended here, you find that through another world body, there's a way that he would then trade outside the country. So I think we would accept that we are not solid on that ground, and it's something that we will definitely take up. Melissa Mella, that's our female prospect of the year from the Boxing Awards. I think we join you there to recognize that she's one of the most promising. She had a beautiful bout in the Makupe tournament last against Mutilisi. She's one of our hopefuls. She's the prospect, isn't she? Yeah, she won the prospect of the year. Generally, I think the Boxing Awards, Chair, without getting into that report, were not without their flaws. They had challenges, and I think the overall atmosphere was also an atmosphere of disbelief. So we had problems. Not all our partners believed that we could pull that through. it had to happen for people to really say that this is a worthy. I mean, even in the week of the awards themselves, KPN as our major partner, you could tell that they still had doubts whether we really knew what we were doing and whether this was a brand worthy of associating with. But when it happened, we didn't even need to wait for the awards to start. Already, there was one province that was raising its hand, Eastern Cape, and saying that, wow, this is the type of a product I would love to identify with and want to be the next host. And immediately, Limpopo said, if Eastern Cape is hosting 2018, Jefferson MCO, I must be the next in line. But, you know, some of these things you really need to put out of the woodwork for people to start believing that you know what you are doing. So we had challenges that we would be the first to admit that logistically and technically we would have done better, but we are glad that we were able to touch the souls and emotions of our licensees, because that is what matters most. The emotion in that hall, Chair, was unparalleled. The love from the licensees, it was amazing. The boxer which the Honorable Member Maleka has spoken about is Azinga Fuzile. He is the prospect of the year. He has spoken about the gym that he trained in. But when you listen also to the trainer of the year, yet another accomplished gentleman, Chief Mchekani, the people that came out of the hands of that promoter, quite amazing as well, and all of them coming from rundown gyms. So, Chair, I think part of what we will try and do going into the next financial year, we will have an indicator that at least speaks about our facilities audit, our facilities plan, and our priority facility areas. In the current APP, we've got an indicator that only talks about inspection of the gyms. But once we have inspected the gyms, all that we do is to issue out letter that, yes, this facility is capable, it's worthy of boxers training in from a safety point of view. But we do not have norms and standards of what at least is a minimum acceptability level of a gym. So I think this is the work that going into the next financial year, we will try and put that up, Chair, so that at least while we do not have a budget, if anybody comes and say to us that from your facilities plan, I can sponsor one or two things, what are your priorities? We can pull out one document and say that this is what we are most worried about and this is where all our gyms are. And you can tell the landscape is uneven. You've got boxers who in Gauteng mostly, you know, the type of facilities they are in might not be the world class, but compared to other boxers who are from village areas, you know, you can tell why often trainers like Chief Mchekani would be incapable of holding on to a boxer all the way to international and world title sometimes. Because once these boxers go to a certain level, then they get gobbled up by trainers who've got affluent facilities. And from a scientific support point of view, they've got better facilities. So I think this issue of facilities is something that we are equally worried about, because we can tell that the landscape is a little bit uneven in that regard. Chair, I think the issue of the boxing in Daba in respect of schools, the chairperson has responded to that. The AG action plan, the CFO has responded to that. The issue of the provincial commission, I think, Chair, this is a straightforward issue that gap has to be closed, because we are also feeling the pinch of that gap. Right now, as we renew licenses, already, even before the other licenses expire on the 31st of March, excuses are already coming. That, yeah, but us in Limpopo, we didn't know because we are being serviced by somebody in Gauteng, so communication is not reaching us on time. Your website, even if it's something on the website, but we are not technologically advanced to a point where we are able to pick up that. And then when it gets to the end, CEO, why don't you get us our own provincial manager? You know, so while the conversation here is about the provincial commission, but I think the point that you are raising of that gap is a reality. We would create our exercise of costing it, so that right now we're talking finances, but if the committee was to ask me one question, that how much will it take, we will not be in the position to respond to that. So I think it is only fair that we should do that exercise, and I think the next time when we say that we need resources or we need to reprioritize to address that issue, we would at least have a proper sense of having quantified it. But I think out of all the Indaba boxing boxing Indaba resolution, this is the one that I'm also now starting to feel that it's a reality that we need to address. Otherwise, you'll all the time have an uneven activity of boxing. Eastern Cape has got two provincial managers. You've got a provincial manager in East London, and you've got somebody else in the PE. Now, it becomes a question of what must come first, demand or supply. Because the fact that there is already activity, hence there are two provincial managers, maybe it is the same reason why there are no activities in other provinces, because you don't have. So I think it's a question that we would need to address if we are to achieve our national footprint. So it's something that I think, working with the board, we will just ensure that we put it up for the next financial year. If our finances can't take us all the way, but some step towards that direction will need to happen. I think maybe, Chair, through you, is a commitment that we can make that we will try and start making strides in that regard. The national footprint, we have spoken about that. We have spoken about the awards. We have spoken about the audit of the gyms. The civil case, whether we would, why did we start the civil case and not a criminal one? So let me give an example. About Mamali, is an instance of a promoter, and this is what the hearing also found. It's an instance of a promoter. Sometimes our promoters become very casual. And that is why us as boxing, we need to be strong. Because you've got a promoter that has been financed by a municipality 5-6 times. And then out of that, each time, they will tell him, when is your tournament next week? Hey, it's too soon. If it could have been in 2 months or next week. And then he says, the tournament is coming. They say, no, you know what? Take a leap of faith. Have this tournament. We will reconcile things. Now, a promoter genuinely believes, without paperwork, that yes, I can run this, and then later on we will regularize things and I will get money out of the system. And some of them, they would even tell you that, yes, this has happened in the past. So, do I believe that there has been outright intention of theft and criminality from the onset? I'll be the first to share to say that maybe not necessarily. Maybe when it started, the intentions were good. But in those last two days before the tournament, when pressure started to mount, some of these off-record arrangements get done. That we don't have an appointment letter for you, but proceed. So you then have a promoter that comes out, holds the tournament, and then after the fact, when the municipality says that unfortunately things have gone pear-shaped, he is found in the leash. But that is in respect of Mamali. When you go to the case of Sijuda, Chair, the part of the outcomes of the disciplinary committee, and the reason I can talk about it confidently is because this is what the hearing itself says, is that it has reason to believe that there has either been falsification of a letter that was given to Boxing SA or participation in the falsification exercise by the promoter. And on the basis thereof, the board has said that in respect of that case, we must proceed to open a criminal case. And the police will be the ones that determine. Because in respect of that particular promoter, we unfortunately have a letter signed by a government official who later says that I never signed that letter. So at least as Boxing SA, we've got a record that confirms that this is a letter that we were made to believe is a commitment by a department, and now it has emerged that this was not the actual commitment. So somebody's signature has been forced. That is why in the case of that particular promoter, they will then also, over and above recovering the money, we would then be instituting also a legal case, a criminal case against him. The issue of equipment and apparel, Chair, our budget, to be honest, it's a bit tight. So in the ideal, we would try to do that. But I think part of what we are doing, you remember I mentioned that our revenue generation strategy has to be completed. So that some of these things, while we cannot drive them directly through our allocation from the fiscals, but when we come across potential sponsors and partners that can contribute towards the sport of boxing, we can then channel them towards assisting some of particularly these disadvantaged teams with basics like equipment and apparel. So I think it's something that we wouldn't want at this point in time to put into our performance plan, but it's something that from a strategy point of view, we need to know where are the pressure points so that whenever we come across potential sponsors, we can be able to channel them, because we do from time to time come across that. So, Chair, I think from my record, these I think are the questions that one have noted. If there's anyone that I would have omitted, I think it would be out of mistake, but this is all that I noted. Thanks.
You know what, we don't have a direct link with the Bloemfontein High Performance Center. But what I know is that through SASCOC, they did offer Sanabo the facility to use it. And I think the challenge with us as professional boxing is the fact that our trainers are expected to be running a business, so which means they should actually, they themselves have their own gyms. And I think it's some of those things that we need to see how best can we manage that in our country, because of what is expected and the situations in our communities are two different things.
Thank you, Chairperson, and then let's appreciate the response as well. I just have a few follow-up questions. The Chairperson, the boxer, out of all these fights for the money between yourselves, PSA, and the promoters, where are the boxers? Are they looked after? Because we don't want the situation like that horrible one we got in Free State, where the boxers were crying. And I mean, others are training in the shack, and you can see this person is passionate, he's doing his work, but no one is doing it. Others they don't have equipment and all that. So we don't want that thing. It might not be your direct work, but make sure it is happening. And the other question would be, if the promoter is bent, the license is bent, what is happening to the boxers down there? What for example, what is happening to the boxing sports in that surrounding area? What are we doing to make sure that we don't punish those who were not the offenders? And lastly, the issue of the rural boxing. This thing we stress it all the time. And for boxing, there's been a very long time that we know boxing as Eastern Cape and Free State. That is a known fact. There might be other areas like Western Cape, but it is known as Eastern Cape and Free State sports. And that must come to an end, because now you are sitting at national parliament, not provincial or whatever. So one may put a question to you, that just to make it practical, and where is boxing happening? In the region of Zululand, I'm talking about Lulundi, Kwanongoma, Pongola, Edumbe, and Fry. Why is boxing happening there? And why is boxing happening in all the sub-regions of Skukune district in the Limpopo area? So those are just examples. And you have to, in the next report, tell us, province by province, what have you done, at least to make sure that boxing is moving let us get an proper update, Chairperson, in the next meeting, so that we know now we are moving. We are not staying in one place, just thinking about this thing being on one area, not moving. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
managed to fly with our tickets, our own, and we managed to accommodate our hotels. So first of all, because we were in that side for other reasons, where to attend, keep on inviting us. Maybe we get a breakthrough on monitoring and be present when these things are happening, because we are spot on it. We can't understand, but that's not upon you. We try, this committee ask us to try, and that we must observe, we must be part. Thank you, Honorable Madiba. You always say that those who are in those provinces must honor us as the committee to attend. Maybe because of cut of budget, all of sort of things. As I'm sitting here, I've been invited in award to be in for the Eastern Cape boxers. So I must try to accommodate myself, to get myself a ticket. But maybe as time goes on, we'll attend. We are all keen to see what you're doing when having these events, because what they commit to do oversight. Oversight is not only going to in an official meeting, even in your event, to critique, as Honorable Mabiba is saying, but because of constraints, we try that next time we want to be with you. Those where this meeting is budget. No, with the part of presentation, and we'll be doing our own things, minutes, and whatever. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Jefferson. Yeah. And keep well. Thank you.
I promise I'll go to it. Very soon I'll be myself.
Thank you.